Now this morning, we welcome back Dr. Schmidt and Dr. Hempelman from their congressional junket. I mean their trip to Asia. They went to Asia for many years, as I understand it. Dr. G has encouraged this trip. And the World Mission Institute made it possible through LWML funds. And so they visited theological institutions in Asia. So that I don't steal any of their thunder, you know these men, and I'm simply going to turn it over to them so that they can share their experiences with us about what's going on in the theological community in Asia. Dr. Hempelman, are you first?
Thank you, Dean Smith. In light of the Epiphany season, the gradual begins, "Praise the Lord, all you nations, extol him, all you peoples, for great is his love toward us." And those words take on special meaning for us at this point because of the meaning coming to be attached to the words "all nations." We have been in more nations now than we had been in the past, and we know of other cultures and the difficulties as well as the joys associated with bringing the gospel of Jesus Christ to these lands and climes. I thank you very much for coming today. We do not wish to have a travelogue for you. We will share with you some important things along the way. We were going to show some slides. I think we, in experimenting right before this, have come to the conclusion that it's too difficult to see them the way it's set up. So maybe what we'll do is we'll end a little early, and if there is time and interest for those who remain behind, maybe we can show you some of the slides at that particular point. There is a handout that we wanted to have distributed to you for the sake of having the names in front of you. These are strange names, and you don't always know how to spell them. And if you're really interested, you can participate by putting down some of the ages of the schools and the enrollments, the programs of study, and so forth, because what that will do is help you to see the complexion of theological education in these particular countries that we visited. Now, for those of you who don't know where Asia is, we have a brand new map over here. The reason we know it's a brand new map is because it says on the bottom, Concordia Seminary, St. Louis 5, Missouri. Do any of you here remember when they still used addresses like that? St. Louis 5, Missouri?
This has to be prior to 1965. That we know. Well, as with Bush, we flew over the Pacific, and our first landing was in Tokyo, which is where we're here, in Japan. And then we went south to Osaka, then over to Seoul, Korea, from Seoul, Korea to Hong Kong, from Hong Kong into China, both to Nanjing and to Beijing, and then back to Hong Kong, and then to Taiwan, and then on the way home via Seoul, Korea. And we visited 8 theological education centers while we were there. And those are the ones that are listed on your sheet. Now, why did we go to Asia? Well, this began some years ago. It's mostly at the persuading of Dr. G. I was already in 1989 making a proposal to the Association of Theological Schools for this study research visitation. That proposal was turned down, as are most proposals. As an academic dean, I can tell you that most proposals that I write for this school are turned down. But every once in a while, you get a really sweet one
that is accepted. So you just have to keep doing that. It's a lot of work, but it's worth it. Anyhow, they said no and wished us their best. And that was enough to have Dr. G continue the search to see if there was a way to get us as a seminary involved with the Asian countries. And so the World Mission Institute put out a project to the Lutheran Women's Missionary League and the Minnesota South District of the Lutheran Women's Missionary League did in fact pick up this project, and they are the ones who funded the trip that we took. And I can assure you that the costs for Dr. Schmidt and me were considerably less than what you've heard on TV for Bush and his entourage, at the rate of $42,000 an hour just to keep Air Force One in the air. Okay, so the purpose of our trip was to visit these partner churches, to explore the possibilities of exchange for professors and students, to look into the need for theological literature, and to gain insights then for the shaping of both graduate and undergraduate theological degree programs here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, and finally to look at the new developments in China, especially in the churches and theological schools. Now for an account of some of the things that we have heard and seen. And it's not a full account. My personal journey alone, personal journal alone that I kept along the way is over 50 double-spaced type pages. So you certainly are only going to be getting a little bit of that this morning. And please, no yawning. Our first stop is in Japan. It is impolite to yawn in Japan. It is also impolite there to cross your legs. You may cross your ankles, but never your legs. There are things like this that you become accustomed to. You always take off your shoes when you go into a room or into a house or into a church or into a dormitory, and you put on slippers. Even when you go to a motel, you're immediately given a kimono and some slippers upon arrival into your room. So the only thing I can say about the room is that the room, being a man of my stature, is a little bit small. Now, it was just right for Dr. Schmidt. But I have never, ever in my lifetime seen such a small shower. I was banging my head all the time. These people simply have Duck's disease. They are very small, and their facilities are made that way. Well, one of the things that you would be interested in is in Tokyo, there is the St. Paul International Lutheran Church. And Dr. Schmidt and I went to this church. It is a congregation recognized by the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the Japan Evangelical Lutheran Church, and Japan Lutheran Church. And when you worship as a Lutheran in Tokyo, this would be one of the places, St. Paul International Lutheran Church. We also went to Roppongi Lutheran Church. We met there a man who graduated from here in 1945, Reverend Dr. George Shibata. He went over 1 month earlier than Reverend Danker. Now, some of you may have heard of Dr. Bill Danker, who used to teach missions here. He came from Japan. Shibata went over a month earlier in 1948 or 49. And one of the things, if anyone is interested, that you might pursue a little bit is the pastor and congregation of St. Paul would love to have a St. Louis vicar sometime. They have never had one. It would take a rather unique individual, but at the same time, I think it would be a real opportunity. Okay, now to the first seminary that you see listed on there, the Japan Lutheran Theological College and Seminary. We went to this school under the hosting of Dr. Shimodade, who graduated from this school in 1985. He got his Doctor of Theology degree in New Testament exegesis. And he was our host. Just a couple of quick things now about this school. If you look at the list there, actually it started in 1909, which would make it 83 years old, but during the war it had to close down, so then it reopened again in 1950. That really makes it only 42 years since wartime in terms of its age, 42 years old. The enrollment is 200 plus, but most of those are in the theological college part. In the seminary part itself, there are only a small number, like 5 to 10 a year, that even enter the Department of Theology. As far as the program of study, they then have the four-year theological college, and after that, 2 years of seminary for pastoral training. And we could go into detail as to what that seminary training is, but mostly to say it's pretty much like yours, obviously condensed, kind of the Japanese way, I guess. And the big thing is a major dissertation that has to be written before you graduate. They have 20 faculty members there. However, that sounds a little inflated, because when you think of pastoral training, there are really only three pastors, teachers from the Japan Lutheran Church that are on the faculty there. Their library is quite large, actually. They have 70,000 volumes, half of which are in Japanese. And where you see Concordia Seminary connections, the closest connection, of course, that we have with that school would be Dr. Shimodade, who directs then the Luther House, which is specifically for students who belong to our partner church, the Japan Lutheran Church. And in that Luther House is where they study the confessions, and some of their dogmatics. They're responsible for their spiritual formation and so forth in this Luther House, which Dr. Shimodade runs. That basically covers this particular part. There is a need in the Japan Lutheran Church for a missionary. They would like someone from the fourth year class this year who would be willing to consider this. So if anyone is interested, please see me, and I'll tell you about that part. Now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Schmidt, who will take you on the next leg of our journey.
The shower stalls in Tokyo were perfectly adequate. We didn't need all the room that we had in the elegant hotels in mainland China. As has been indicated already, Dr. G is the person who was behind our trip to Asia. When I was the acting director of graduate studies in 1983-84, Dr. G talked to me already about going to Korea to teach. He urged me to go 1 year. I chose not to go. When I became the director of graduate studies, he said, "You work with foreign students extensively, and you should have more of a world perspective." I am not an international traveler. This was my first trip abroad, so I've waited till my declining years to make the trip. Nonetheless, I found that Dr. G's advice was absolutely correct. One gets a different perspective if he has stepped out of this country into a foreign culture. I also had an interest in going to Asia because in the graduate school we have been serving a number of students from Asia, and they are always on our campus, and they're very friendly, and I enjoy meeting with them and working with them, and I thought I would also like to be on their homeland, in their homeland, on their native soil. And I found it very exciting to be there. And so some of the places we went in Asia were because were places that I had urged us to go because I wanted to find see some of the graduates of the school, Concordia Graduate School. And so one place we wanted to go was Kobe, Japan. This is near Osaka, some distance from Tokyo. We could have taken the bullet train, but we didn't know that, and so we flew on a very large plane that one-hour journey. The reason I was interested in Kobe Lutheran Theological Seminary in Kobe, Japan, is the fact that we have at that seminary, which is not affiliated with the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, nor with our partner church in Japan, three or four faculty members of that small seminary who have received graduate degrees at Concordia Seminary. The institution was founded in 1957 by the Norwegian Lutheran Mission, and so that would be its roots. I said three of the faculty members have degrees from our institution. One is the president of the institution. The other is the academic dean of the institution. The president has a Ph.D. from our institution. The academic dean has an S.T.M. from our institution. The academic dean is Norwegian. He is not Japanese. And one man on the faculty, Hashimoto, will be receiving his Ph.D. in spring. His dissertation is about 700 pages. We usually don't require people to write that much, but he chose to write that much. And there's a Bible school in connection with the Kobe Seminary, and one of the men who teaches in the Bible school has an STM in pastoral counseling from us, and that STM in pastoral counseling will be converted to a DMIN in pastoral care. The student body at the Kobe Lutheran Seminary is made up of both men and women, and both the seminary and the Bible school. There are 19 full-time students in the Bible school, 2 to 5 part-time students. There are 15 regular students in the seminary, so you'll note that the seminary, too, is relatively small. In addition to the 15 students, there are 6 who are auditing. Dr. G pointed out to me that Concordia Seminary is well known around the world, and that's certainly the case in Asia, and that we can leave an impact upon Christendom in other parts of the world if we keep our doors open to training people for service in other parts of the world, and particularly for leadership training positions. I recognized how well that can possibly be done when Dean Hempelman and I were in a car driven by the academic dean of the Kobe Seminary. The academic dean had picked us up at the airport, and he was picking up another man at the airport as well, a man from the Philippines. Since those two men had some business that they could conduct jointly while we were traveling in the car, Dean Hempelman and I sat in the back seat and just listened to the conversation in the front seat. The man from the Philippines was interested in systematic theology, as was the academic dean of the Kobe Seminary. Discussion centered upon what we ought to be emphasizing in systematic theology. The man from the Philippines was indeed interested primarily in social ministry. Philippines had just suffered from terrific storms. Another one was on the way, I believe, at the time. And he said, we have to be concerned about the physical needs of people. We have to address the needs of people today. And their needs, to a large extent, are physical needs, and we dare not overlook that kind of thing. In any case, one recognized what his emphasis was in systematic theology. And then came the response from Dean Soros, who had graduated from our institution with his graduate degree, although his undergraduate work had been done in Norway. And one heard a Lutheran response. And we listened to the response, and I knew that Professor Emeritus Richard Klann had been the advisor for Professor Soros's thesis. And after a while, I said to Dr. Hempelman, one could hear Richard speaking in the responses. And it was indeed the case that there was a strong Lutheran emphasis that the academic dean had as he responded to the man who was so much concerned about social needs and ministry, social ministry. The academic dean pointed out out that man's needs are needs that can be addressed from the point of view of sin and grace and law and gospel. And it was refreshing to hear that. And so I felt Dr. G has something when he says, make sure that you keep the doors of Concordia Seminary open for graduate study for people from other parts of the world. At Kobe Seminary, Dr. Hempelman and I both had lectures. Professor Hashimoto, who will be receiving his degree in May, found out that we were coming to Japan, and he was the one who arranged for the invitation for us to come to Kobe, and he said, well, you can have a scholarly lecture while you're there, too. He was the translator for us. The lecture was to the student body. They asked us to address the topic of actual issues in theological education today. Well, I don't have much experience outside of Concordia Seminary, and my experiences are limited to the Midwest, but I did pick up a few things, I think, along the way as to what I think might be theological issues today. And my experiences with fourth-year student interviews and also with graduate students taking tests on the Bible brought me to this conclusion that there were three issues that maybe ought to be before us as we consider theological education today. The points which I made in my presentation were this: that in theological education today, we ought to be concerned about providing an educational program which leads to a good mastery of biblical content. And that seemed to draw an appropriate response from the people in Kobe, that they were concerned too, that our seminaries must make certain that the graduates have a good mastery of biblical content. Secondly, I noted that an issue would be this, that we should be concerned about providing an educational program which leads to a right understanding of the purpose of theological study. In other words, that the center of all theological study is Jesus Christ, crucified and risen from the dead for the salvation of the human race. Thirdly, it seems to me that this is an issue, that we ought to provide an educational program which equips students to become faithful proclaimers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. To sit in the ivory tower and just to know what the Bible has said and what the center of Holy Scripture is one thing, but the task is a task of communication. And therefore, we ought to make certain that we have educational programs which equip students to become faithful proclaimers of the gospel. While we were at the Kobe Seminary, we had another opportunity. The Asians are very much concerned about standards in their schools, and so there are accrediting associations in Asia. One is the Asia Theological Association. The Asians are concerned also about training Asians in Asia for graduate school, and so there is an Asia School for Graduate Studies in Asia using a number of seminaries for different kinds of purposes. In any case, the Asia Theological Association Executive Committee was meeting in Kobe the day that we were there. And they were kind enough to invite us to lunch at noon on the 24th floor in an elegant restaurant overlooking the city of Kobe. I had met one or two of the people before, because one man who's very active in the Asia Theological Association as well as in the Asia School for Graduate Study has his Ph.D. from this institution. He received it in 1970. And it was sort of exciting to go into his office. His office was in Seoul, Korea, at the present time, and we did meet him there again, to go into his office and to see a Concordia Seminary diploma on the wall. Again, an indication of how we can serve even beyond our own church body. At the dinner, which we were guests, we were able to converse and meet with representatives of the executive committee, and the representatives came from Hong Kong, Korea, Japan, Indonesia, Philippines, and India. So that too was an exciting experience. The world might center in Concordia Seminary in our minds, but the world doesn't end there. And certainly the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ is meant for all nations.
Okay, to continue
now we left Japan, where fewer than 1% of people are Christian, where the church, that is our partner church today, consists of simply 33 congregations with 3,000 baptized souls. We went over then to Seoul, Korea, where we got used to saying Annyeonghaseyo, Annyeonghaseyo. You always bow Annyeonghaseyo to everybody. And it simply means, are you at peace? And Brad, of course, did that many times, I'm sure, right, to everyone. A wonderful place here at Luther Seminary, where we have an exchange program. Concordia Seminary, I think, is fortunate to have three exchange programs. You saw Oberursel mentioned in the daily announcements yesterday. Toward the end of this week, probably will surface again the one to Westfield House in Cambridge. And then we also have the one to Korea. And the one to Korea is not in operation this year because Dr. G isn't going to be there. He's lecturing at the present time in Germany. Well, let me tell you a couple of things about our visit in Korea. The Korean Lutheran Church, a bit smaller, 23 congregations, but still with about 3,000 baptized people, has as its real evangelistic backbone in the country the Bethel Bible Series. They have really used this to their advantage. They've made it their own. They not only have trained 35 to 40 Lutheran pastors, which helps, but they have actually trained over 4,000 other Christian pastors under their Lutheran auspices to study and to teach the Bible. You put that together with the Lutheran Hour, which has been there for a considerable amount of time and has had a great influence in Korea. You can see that there is a strong Lutheran message being brought to the people there. And of course, we met with the student body. Dr. Schmidt lectured in a class, a worship class, for a couple of hours. I gave a lecture there on Luther, A Shepherd Under Christ. We stayed with the president for breakfast one day and for dinner, Dr. Maynard Doro, who is a graduate from here. And since you know some things about this seminary from Dr. G telling you, I'll simply let you know that it's beautiful. It's 40 kilometers out of Seoul. The food is good, but extremely hot. Everything in Korea is spicy hot. I was fortunate by God's grace to have been accompanied by my official taster, because I am allergic to hot spices. Dr. Schmidt was my official taster. he always let me know. He would sip the soup and then he would go like this, and I knew it was too much. Oh, the food is hot. Kimchi is so hot. Whatever you think hot is, kimchi will put you through the roof. That stuff is really, but it is a mainstay of food in Korea. Every meal they eat kimchi. So we ate with the students there. The school is only 26 years old, actually. At the present time, there are 144 people in the College of Theology, with 9 who are in the graduate level, that is the pastoral training level. You go for 2 years again beyond college if you've gone through the Lutheran College. Otherwise, if you've graduated from a university, then you have to go 3 years to like their seminary training. There are 8 faculty members at this school, one of which is our own Dr. G, is listed as a faculty member there. They have a library which is not as extensive as the one that I told you in Japan. It only has 10,000 volumes, but what makes it maybe even a little better is the fact that the majority of the volumes in this library are in the Korean language. Many of the Asian libraries are large, but they have a lot of English works in them, given by well-meaning people. But the students don't always have the ability to read English, so the books really don't do them much good. And of course, we have many, many contacts on this part of your paper. If any of you are keeping track of Concordia Seminary connections, we have not only Dr. G and Dr. Duro, who is the president, but we have the pastor of Central Lutheran Church, where Pastor Schmidt preached and I preached. His name is Kim, Reverend Heishul Kim, and he's a teacher also out at the seminary. Then the academic dean's name is Kim Soon Hoi Kim. He translated for me. It looked like Mutton Jeff because he was pretty sharp too, and he was kind of hid behind the lectern. But he's great fun because he learned to speak English by cleaning army barracks during the Korean War. So he told us he had to take all the dams and those kinds of words out, but he has really good diction when it comes to speaking English because he heard it already as a little boy. Then we have a student actually from here, or who was just here but had to go back. He's the Dean of Students, Professor Park. And then finally, Professor Um. And Professor Um also was quite a help to us while we were there. We attended the International Lutheran Church, which is in Seoul, Korea, and then both of us preached at another church, and I think that's where Dr. Schmidt wants to pick up. Yes, a question?
Yeah, in Japan, less than 1% of people are Christians. What's the percentage of Korean?
23%.
I lectured on the subject of worship at the seminary in Korea, and then I did preach on Sunday morning, which was All Saints Sunday, at St. Luke's Lutheran Church, and the man who is the pastor there is the man who teaches worship at the seminary. Dr. Hempelman preached on the same Sunday. I had preached on the previous Reformation Day as well for a large Reformation service. But I was, when Dr. Hempelman preached on Sunday, he had at least a few English-speaking people around him when he was preaching on Sunday morning, as I did in that same church on Reformation Day. But I was taken to St. Luke's Lutheran Church up an alley someplace. We did get there. I wasn't sure whether I would make it because the cab driver just drove down the narrow alley street where people were walking and children were playing, and he just tooted the horn, and everybody had to scatter like sheep, and I sat there like that. Where is our sensibility with this kind of thing? But they drive that way all over in Korea. I found out that even the seminary professors drive that way when they go to the seminary. The little year and a half old youngster just has to get out of the way when someone toots the horn. So that was a cultural shock for me. But the Sunday morning experience preaching at the St. Luke's Lutheran Church was really a highlight experience for me in Korea. First of all, Pastor Park is very liturgically sensitive, and he's concerned about worship planning. And so when I arrived and came into his office after we chatted for just a few minutes, he took me up into the sanctuary and he said, "Now this is the way it will go. We will come down to the aisle in procession. We go here, we go there." And you know, for a professor of worship to have somebody take that kind of interest in planning the service so that it goes well, that the people of God are not distracted with all kinds of unplanned kinds of activity, that kind of thing made me feel good. I knew precisely what I was to do, and then we went back down into the office and continued our chatting. In addition to that, He had the service folder, which was not too meaningful to me, since it's all in Korean, but I did not have any difficulty noting up at the top 7, 9 to 17. That's Revelation 7, 9 to 17. That was my text. And it did say, behind some Korean, Dr. Wayne E. Schmidt. I assumed it said preacher. Then, there was a little heading at the top, underlined, and then three sections underlined as well. My sermon had a theme, and anybody who knows me knows that I state the theme clearly at the beginning of the sermon so that everybody knows what I'm going to talk about. My sermons also have parts, which I don't hesitate to state either. I had three that Sunday, and you will notice three divisions. He had summarized my sermon, each one of the parts, and put it in the service folder for the Sunday. The next page, he told me, this is the service order. I couldn't read any of it, but he told me what each part was, and I wrote it in, and lo and behold, it was our regular divine service. So the planning for the service just was exciting. Koreans pray a long time when they pray. I wasn't sure what he was doing there for the 5 minutes or so when he was in the general prayer, or a little bit longer. He also selected a post-sermon hymn which fit the sermon just to a T. The singing in the service was extremely enthusiastic. The choir singing was well done. There were two flutes and a cello for incidental music, as well as for accompanying of the hymns and the liturgy. It's obvious when you met with a man like this that he worked hard. In fact, Dr. Doro's wife says she has a great deal of concern for the Korean pastors because of the hours they spend. He took me to a classroom behind the church and said, here we have daily devotions from 4:30 to 5 in the morning. I suppose it's necessary because it takes an hour and a half to go 10 miles in the traffic in Korea, so maybe they have to start early in the morning. I also observed a chart of church planning that Pastor Park had in the church. He's concerned about how is the church to plan its program for the years to come. He has some goals set for members. He has some goals set for education. And he also had some goals set for worship, one of which included eventually obtaining an organ for worship. And so I couldn't argue with that either. In any case, one saw people worshiping enthusiastically, and one saw a well-planned worship service in the Lutheran tradition. I had no difficulty following the service along, even though I had to sing la, 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 and put in the words as I would know them when we were in the Gloria in Excelsis or wherever else. From there, we moved to Hong Kong. Hong Kong is the place at which the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has the Board for Mission Services Southeast Asia Coordinating Office, and it's Dr. Henry Rowald who is the Synod representative in that office, and that Hong Kong is also the place for the China Coordinating Center, and Dr. Rowald is in charge of that too. Hong Kong is serving as the eyes and the ears of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod for what's happening in China at the present time. Dr. Rowald speaks Chinese most fluently, and he would be our guide into China, as Dr. Hempelman will explain to you in just a few moments. We do have a partner church in Hong Kong, the Lutheran Church Hong Kong Synod, and there is a seminary there too. Things are not going so well at the seminary at the present time. It's an old institution. The seminary began as a Bible institute in the year 1950. It developed into a seminary in 1956. The church is able to operate an extensive educational program in Hong Kong so that the church was able to develop schools starting in 1953 at the kindergarten level, elementary school level, and secondary school level, and there's government subsidy for facilities for those kinds of schools, so we have an opportunity to do an extensive educational ministry. The seminary, I said, is not doing so well at the present time. There have been some difficulties in the years. It operates only in the evening now. There are three classes in the evening, running from 6:30 to 9:50 with chapel. The academic dean is Raymond Wong, who was on our campus for a number of years. There are 23 students in the evening classes. The facilities are excellent, however, in Hong Kong. In one building, or one complex, I should say, there's the seminary, there's an international school, and there's the Lutheran Church Hong Kong Synod with its offices. It's a four-story complex, very attractive, a library of 17,000 volumes, 9,000 of which are in English. Pastor Professor Raymond Wong tells us that the seminary is planning to stay there to serve the church as Hong Kong becomes part of the People's Republic of China. That takes care of Hong Kong.
Okay, now for China. So we flew north from Hong Kong into China by Dragon Air. So we knew that we were in China when we saw the airplane itself. This was a most delightful experience. We landed in Nanjing. Nanking, it used to be called, means southern capital. How many of you have been in a communist country? You remember then how bland, plain, no color, everything looks. Nanjing was almost scary because we weren't really sure they even had lights for the airstrip. And when you go inside, it's just like cardboard boxes, so to speak, that customs officials are standing behind. And it's really stark. They pulled up the baggage, you know, on one big wagon, and everybody just kind of had to go out and find your own. They act like they have radar and detection devices for explosives and things in your suitcase, but I think they just run it through on a conveyor belt. I doubt that they even have anything to check that. So it's really primitive. There were people pouring cement for the tarmac and doing it by hand with hand trowels, these large areas of cement. It was quite antiquated. The city is just filled with bicycles. You cannot believe how many bicycles can be on a street at one time. And you have to walk through them if you're going to cross the street. And we caught on to that. If you just go with the flow, but if you hesitate once, you're dead. You're just dead meat. And the rule is, as long as they're ringing their little bell, and the little bell's ringing all over the place, but as long as they're ringing their bell, if they hit you, then it's your fault. That's why they keep ringing them all the time. It's quite an experience. So anyhow, in Nanjing, there is a seminary. And this seminary at the present time, you'll see it on your sheet, again, Nanjing Union Seminary. This seminary is actually 40 years old, but the Cultural Revolution shut it down. So since the Cultural Revolution, that's only 11 years that it's been back in existence. Many of its books were burned out on the street, books from the library in 1966 and the years following. But now they have a four-year college program, 110 students in that, and then their three-year program following that for the more pastoral-oriented study, and there are 20 students in that at the present time. They did have a lay training program as well for the house churches and lay volunteers, but that's being phased out as of this year. We don't really have any connections with the Nanjing Union Seminary, but we were pleased to be able to go there to see that, again, they're picking up the pieces through the China Christian Council. They're trying to recruit students again. Interest in Christianity in China is in fact very high. And that was, I guess, witnessed to us mostly when we were there on Sunday morning and went to the church in Beijing. Beijing Christian Church, where we went, is the one where the ambassadors used to go. George Bush's daughter was baptized in this church. We got there Sunday morning about 15 minutes before church began. They were singing. They sing usually a half hour before church starts of songs. I asked them why they did that. They said they did it for spiritual pleasure. They also once in a while learn a new song that way by singing prior to the service. At any rate, once we got going with the service, with the choir and so forth, there were between 800-900 people in this particular service. A lady who was trained at Berkeley in systematic theology was the preacher for the day. There are five pastors of this church. Dr. Rowald took notes on the sermon and shared those with us over lunch, so we actually got to hear the sermon through him, which, by the way, was quite good in its orientation. Good meaning that she was very specific about the means of grace as well in terms of her preaching. See, what else can I tell you about it other than there was a man there that we met after the service who used to be the pastor of that church. He spent 21 years in prison during the Cultural Revolution, recently was released, and he had come back this Sunday as a guest. Quite a cheerful man. First time Dr. Rowald had met him, too. If you stayed later and you look at some of the pictures, there's a picture of him on there. Now, this China Christian Council is really the group that, so to speak, is in charge of Christian activities in China. You see, the Chinese Constitution says very clearly that everyone in China is entitled to their own personal belief. You have freedom of belief in China. Now, to practice that freedom, they only ask three things of you: that you do it at a specified time, with the leadership of a specific person or persons, and at a specific designated place, like a church, with a pastor that has church at 8 o'clock in the morning and at 10:30. That's all they ask. So you can see that in light of that, there is quite a bit of freedom. There are no denominations in China. Christendom doesn't want them. They don't believe that the Western heresies have been particularly meaningful to them because they didn't live through those. They probably will have their own heresies and their own divisions someday. But at the present time, there is the Christian Church in China with the leadership of Bishop Ding. Bishop Ding we did get to meet, but only momentarily, and that was in the library of the seminary in Nanjing. There is also a seminary in Beijing, and that seminary is quite small, and the day that we were there, we didn't get to see the person who was going to show us around because he was ill. He's only, what, 82 years old or something like that. But the assistant principal did come and meet with us along with another gentleman. And for the purposes of your sheet, simply to know that this is a relatively new seminary and old buildings. It's only 6 years old, but it does have 83 students in it at the present time. And that's not very many in light of the fact that it's in charge of half of China. There is another seminary way up in Manchuria, but otherwise that whole northern part of China, any student would have to go to Beijing in order to get their ultimate theological education. There again, they have both a four-year program to get people up to speed and then a two-year program for specific pastoral training. They have 11 full-time faculty, and if you count the part-time faculty of pastors and things from the Beijing area, they have 21 faculty members. Their library is really very inadequate. They don't have many books even in Chinese. They have a number of old books in English, which no one can read, and they're not properly cataloged or anything. So it really needs to have some work done. Altogether in China, at the present time, there are 14 seminaries operating. Five of those are regional seminaries. Eight of them are provincial seminaries. Most of the provincial seminaries have like a two-year program, and then you go to a regional seminary, and they have two more years, and then you could either be ordained at that particular time with the authorization of the church, or you could go on to one of the major seminaries for more graduate study. There are about 1,000 theological students in China at the present time, and 5 million members of the Christian church, we are told, with at least 10,000 churches. But nobody really knows exactly, I don't think, how many churches are going on. Of interest at this point is the conversation with Dr. Rowald as to how we fit in to the new developments in China. First, he answered my question about how Concordia Seminary might serve the world better by giving three responses to that question. How could we at this institution serve the world better in terms of theological education? Number one, that we would work more closely with our partner churches and seminaries. And I think that's true, that we need to have student and faculty exchanges. We need to visit and talk with one another and to share theological resources. That's one thing we can do. Secondly, to seek partnership with other seminaries. And by that, he's specifically speaking of Lutheran seminaries, that we keep contact with them so that we can continue to be the leaven in the loaf that we have come to be throughout the world. People are looking for good theological leadership, and you guys can provide that as you visit and talk with other seminarians. And then finally, his third response was simply an exchange of faculty and students. Particularly faculty, too, should be involved in exchange programs so they get this transcultural experience. Just some ideas that he offered that I would like to throw out to you to think about as students. I think it would be good for a student to consider a month or a summer intensive cultural experience. Maybe our school needs to select them if the motivation isn't there on its own. I think a good place, even if you want to go close, would be in Mexico City. The church owns property in Mexico City. It would be very reasonable to be able to go there in terms of costs and actually live in another culture for a period of time. To do the kind of thing that Dr. Schmidt and me did in actually going to other countries, and when you're there visiting the seminaries and the churches that are there, you'll find yourself welcomed and you will learn from them and they from you. So I think this is a real possibility for students to think about, almost like a field work experience in another culture. And that would seem to me pretty easy to work out. Another thing that some of you could do during a summer would be to go to China, for instance, or to Taiwan, any place, and teach English. Teach in one of their schools for 6 weeks, for 8 weeks. Right now, in Beijing alone, there are over 200 Christian volunteers who are running kindergartens, teaching in schools, teaching English, and bringing the message of Jesus Christ to people in that city. They're not connected necessarily with anything official always, but they're there in a capacity as an ambassador for Christ. And if anyone is interested in this, Dr. Rowald even mentioned that he would be willing to coordinate summer programs in some of these foreign countries for us. Well, in light of that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Schmidt for the last portion of the trip.
The last thing which Dr. Hempelman mentioned about the need for people to go over to Asia or other parts of the world to become acquainted with what goes on there reminded me of something else that I became aware of when we were in Asia. Dr. Hempelman has mentioned the names of Dr. Doro in Korea and Dr. Rowald in Hong Kong. Those two men are invaluable resources to our church body. They have spent 25 years in that field. And we were able to go around with both of the men in the settings of the countries in which they lived. We walked the streets of Seoul with Dr. Doro and his wife and went to an art show. And he can talk the language and you immediately are in. Dr. Rowald took us into China, and he would go by a little shop where a man was making something, and he would just grab it and show it to us. And nobody screamed because he would immediately start talking Chinese, and then they were all at ease with him. Those men have spent their lives there. We need young men now and their wives to commit themselves to that kind of thing if we're going to carry on this part of the work of the church. So wherever, if you have an interest, good, develop it. If others have the interest, encourage them. Obviously, everybody isn't meant for this kind of thing. In the 1960s, I had a call to Japan. I chose to decline it at that time. I think my reasons were valid, but it is a lifelong commitment that some people make, and we need people of that kind. Dr. Rowald pointed out to us that when we were visiting with China, we should be alert to the fact that there are three Chinas, not one. One is Hong Kong, one is mainland China, and the other is Taiwan. And so we move now to Taiwan, the last place which we visited. Taiwan was formerly known as Formosa. That's a word that the Portuguese gave the island. It means beautiful island, and indeed it is a beautiful place. It's the place to which the Chinese nationalists finally retreated in the Civil War, in which the communists took over the mainland. This is the place at which the late Dr. Roy Silflo, brother of August Silflo, went from China in order to serve as a missionary in Taiwan and to establish a seminary in the 1950s. The first graduating class of that seminary had a man in it who is now the president of the church in Taiwan. There are a number of seminaries in Taiwan, more than 20 in fact. About five of them are large ones. Some offer only the Bachelor of Theology degree. That is a kind of college degree with a major in religion, and some offer also the MDiv degree. About 3% of the population of Taiwan is Christian. The one seminary which we visited was the China Lutheran Seminary. Our hosts, the president of the church in Taiwan, and a missionary who is a graduate of this institution, a young man, also has his SDM from here, Craig Molitoris. Those two men were our hosts. They took us to the China Lutheran Seminary. This is a joint seminary operated by people affiliated with ELCA, as well as people affiliated with European Lutheran churches, and also with the Church of the Lutheran Brethren. The seminary program in Taiwan is really not operating with our partner church at the present time to any large extent. Some have advocated that we ought to use the China Lutheran Seminary and then establish a Luther house, such as Dr. Hempelman explained to you, exists in Japan. This China Lutheran Seminary is building a new building, facility, wants money for it, of course. The principal of the school is a man of Finnish background. In this seminary at the present time, there are 64 full-time students, 45 in the Bachelor of Theology program, and 19 in the MDiv program. The library has 11,000 Chinese volumes, about 6,000 English volumes. In addition to the China Lutheran Seminary, there's another seminary in Taiwan, in Taipei, which we visited, and I was particularly interested in that seminary because the president of that seminary is a man who has his PhD again from our institution. I was the reader for his dissertation, which dealt with the New Testament. Caleb Huang is the man's name. He's the president of the institution. The school is 21 years old, and it's a well-known and highly respected school in Taiwan. It is decidedly Calvinistic. Some people in Taiwan have wondered whether we couldn't use it for part of the training of people for our church. And again, the thing that's so inviting and enticing with it is that the facilities of this particular church body, or of the seminary, I should say, not church body, because it does not belong to a specific church body, that the facilities are so impressive. The facilities are located in Taipei with six floors plus a basement and an additional floor in an adjacent international school. There are dormitory rooms in the facility. There are several attractive apartments for students as well as faculty. There's a well-appointed and equipped library with 35,000 volumes, 10,000 in English, the rest, 10,000 Chinese, the rest in English. I just walked through everything. I had to go fast. I walked through the library and did find Lenski there and also Kyle Dalich, so there might be something of a Lutheran imprint someplace along the way. Getting people to study theology in Taiwan is not easy. No one, we were told, in Taiwan would choose to attend a Bible college. No one would choose to attend a Bible college. Bachelor of Theology people are almost always people who failed the difficult college entrance examinations. And so it's the second class group that would come there. However, sometimes college students, after they have finished their college training and done their mandatory military service and go into the world of work, then have second thoughts. And so Dr. Huang did point out to us that about 60% of the MDiv students, not the Bachelor of Theology, but the MDiv students, are people who do have college and university degrees. The guides in Taiwan, as I indicated, were President Jen, president of the church body, and Craig Molitoris. Craig, at the present time, is a missionary assigned to the task of church planting, and we had one very interesting experience with Craig. Traffic in Taipei is worse than traffic in Seoul, if you can believe that, Brad. It's worse in Taipei than in Seoul. And so Craig Molitoris chose not to drive us one evening, but rather to take a cab. He said it's just simpler than to try to find a parking place and to get around in the traffic. And so he did hail a cab for us, and then all of a sudden he was engaged in a lively conversation with the cab driver. And Dr. Hempelman said to me, could you imagine that happening in the United States, that there would be such a lively conversation between a passenger and a cab driver? And I said, I wonder whether this is possibly an evangelism dialogue. And so after a while, we asked Craig what was going on. And he gave the cab driver directions, and Pastor Molitoris is another man who's extremely fluent in Chinese. He's married to a Chinese woman. He spent time in Hong Kong a number of years ago, then came back to seminary, and now is in Taiwan. And when he gave directions to the cab driver and conversed with the cab driver relative to business matters, the cab driver said, you speak excellent Chinese. Most Westerners we can hardly understand and don't know what they're talking about. What is your occupation? And that was the in for the man. How important to know the language. And so Pastor Molitora saw a little Buddha on the dashboard and then began to talk to him about Buddha and moved to Jesus Christ and pointed out that Jesus Christ was God's son who came into the world, suffered and died and rose again from the dead. And the cab driver said, "You mean this Jesus rose again from the dead?" Yes, and as Craig pointed out to us after a while, I felt like saying to him, "I wouldn't be living in this part of the world when there are so many better parts to live in if I didn't believe that." But he didn't say that to the cab driver. That was just his thought. In any case, again, this pointed out to me how important it is to have people committed to this kind of work and how important it is for us to find young men to do this kind of thing. The church in Taiwan is struggling on just how it is to train workers to serve at the grassroots level, train workers to work with the training of pastors at the upper level. The seminary really no longer exists. The library of the seminary, however, is in the headquarters building of the Lutheran Church, which we our partner church in Taiwan, and we have the possibility, perhaps, of working with a kind of Luther House arrangement. The trip was exciting, informative, rewarding. Our Christmas letter says that Wayne went to Asia. He didn't look forward to the trip with a great deal of enthusiasm. But he came home and said that the trip was educational and informative. In Christ, there is no east nor west. We have much work to do. Let us be about it.
Would you be willing to take some questions if somebody has one? Sure.
Finish for today.
I have a question related to the seminary in Japan. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what are the Japan Lutheran churches' specific goals for their gospel outreach in Japan over the next few years, and how is the involvement of Missouri City missionaries going to be a part of those goals?
Yes, you were the Japan authority, weren't you, with respect to partner church?
Yes, I don't believe that we heard from anyone about specific plans, like, for instance, Korea has a 10-year plan for the church. They seem to be pretty settled in Japan to maintain the Luther House as a way for pastoral training for the Japan Lutheran Church and continuing to be in this partnership with the other Lutherans as far as the college level is concerned. Their evangelism outreach is, if you would compare it again to Korea, is not as as aggressive as the Korean one is. I think one of the mainstays in Japan are the volunteer youth ministers who do an exceedingly good job in getting out to the congregations. They really are quite helpful there. They are in other parts of the world too, but Japan in particular. Japan is very, very hard work because the people are so, even the word for God in Japanese, as you know, is like a generic term. It's not a capital G. There is no word in Japanese for the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so as soon as you say God, you're almost talking about their culture and the deities of their culture. Really tough work.
You mentioned the lack of denominations in China.
Yes.
My understanding from the past has been that there's actually a state church there, the Free South Movement, as well as kind of an evangelical house church movement. Did you get any feeling for that when you were there?
We didn't for the house church, but Christianity is connected to the government's ministry of affairs in religious matters through the China Christian Council. They take care of all of Christianity. That includes the house churches as well as anything done publicly. They consider themselves post-denominational, but they don't want denominations. in Christendom. They seem rather strong about that, I would say.
Yes, and they have no idea of just how much of this house church business is going on. Because that really, technically, is not legal. As Dr. Hempelman pointed out, designated place, designated time, designated people. And you just don't go around ringing doorbells. You don't go around saying, I'd like to have you come and worship at my house now. That is illegal.
But it's really opening up. And my impression is that the revolutionaries in China, the old-timers, they have their feet dug into the cement, and they're going to stay until they die, and probably not too much is going to change. But you know, they're older. They're not going to live that much longer. So change is imminent. And some of it is already going on. You actually see women. We saw one woman on the street that had a skirt. Now, that would not have happened even a couple of years ago. A skirt is ludicrous, lewd, Western. Only a prostitute would wear that. During the Cultural Revolution, they would have taken such a woman, what did he say, and
stripped her.
They would have stripped her of her clothes, shaved her head, and then paraded her in the street, saying, now go home and live like a Westerner. But she got by with it, at least as far as we know. Yes?
You mentioned that Taiwan education, theological education there is really struggling. What do you see as Concordia Seminary's role in helping them or as a sister church? Do we have any responsibility to them or to their church?
Phileas on there is with the Board for Mission Services, and so that's not the seminary's responsibility. Other than that, the seminary ought to be concerned about trying to encourage people to think about working in that particular area and then being in contact with the Board for Mission Services. Precisely what we could do as a seminary, I suppose an exchange program is possible, but everything is just so soft there now that we just couldn't do much as I would see it. I'd just like to go back to the item on China, too, if you would. There, this is a cultural kind of thing that you might be interested in. One sees all of the revolt in communist countries in Europe. One does not have a feeling of discontent in communist China among the people. There's food in the stores. They don't have heat in their buildings. the one seminary, I guess, in the library puts a stove in the winter. But no central heat or things like that, even though it's sort of a Missouri climate. But the people seem content, and they've lived in a culture where they expect direction from the top. And one gets that general feeling, I'll go in and get what I want and go home with it. Sorry about that one. Did I finish the question with Taiwan? Go ahead, a little bit more.
I was curious because it seems that some of the responsibilities of getting something going is being put on the Board for Mission Services, but then they don't really have a direct idea of what they want to see happen. And the church there doesn't know what they're doing. And it just seems like, in a sense, eventually it'll just kind of stop altogether. And is that what we're waiting for to happen?
No, I think they're working together. The Board for Mission Services and that church body are working together to say, how can we address these particular problems? But I think to have a third party come in to try to do some directing would just upset the whole thing. Some of the things have to be straightened out there first.
Thank you very much for coming today.
And best luck.